Good morning.
Mr. Rabbits.
May it please the Court, Ms. Dillers, Ms. Bonamici. My name is Gary Rabbits, and I represent Maurice Bell, who stands convicted of the willful failure to pay child support under federal law. The case involves three issues, one of which is a sentencing issue. In my limited time here today, unless the Court has questions about the sentencing issue, I prefer to address the other issues relating to the CSRA. I think the parties agree that those two issues, at least in this circuit, present questions of first impression, and I'd like to devote my time to those. The first of these questions is whether the offense Mr. Bell is charged with is a continuing offense for statute of limitations purposes. I guess I would begin with the general rule that an offense is committed when each element has occurred, and that, broadly speaking, the continuing offense doctrine appears to be an exception to that general rule.
So in this case, when you're supposed to make a child support payment every month, when is it not an offense to fail to make that monthly payment? You get 4 years to pay, and then you're exempt for the rest of your life?
No, I think we have to understand the CSRA, in my view, is an enforcement mechanism.
Well, I'm asking, though, I mean, call it enforcement. Seems to me every month when you don't make that payment, you have once again violated a court-ordered payment. So you have a new violation.
That was an argument that was suggested by the Fifth Circuit in the Elvikin case. I wouldn't agree with that analysis, but to answer the Court's question...
Reminds me actually of a very famous case written by one of my colleagues about possession of a cheetah pelt that United States against Winnie, in which this Court held that as long as you possessed the cheetah pelt, you were violating the law because it's the possession that's the violation.
I guess my reading of the statute sets certain triggers for criminal liability. And those triggers are set out in 228, specifically either an amount involving $5,000 or $10,000 arrearages, depending on whether you're looking at a misdemeanor or felony offense.
Right, but 228A3, if you willfully fail to pay a support obligation with respect to a child, and so that my question really keeps coming back to, why isn't each month when you still have a support obligation and you willfully fail to pay it, why isn't that, in a sense, if you want to call it a chain of new offenses instead of a continuing offense, that's all right with me, but it would amount to the same thing for Mr. Bell.
I think that the statute refers to a support obligation. There is but a single support obligation in this case. And I think
pay each month, I assume. I mean, most of them aren't daily payments or annual, but...
Right.
Support obligation is defined by the court order.
Correct. And there's you are only violating a particular court order. The federal criminal liability doesn't trigger.
You get to not violate the court order after 4 years, according to you?
No, not at all. I think the violation occurs after 2 years if it's a felony or when the amount reaches the statutory threshold of $10,000.
You're in a continuous state of violation as long as you don't pay.
But I don't believe this is a continuing offense, and my reasoning would be that...
Sense.
That well,
other than just saying you're exempt, you know, if you just hold off long enough, then the government won't be able to enforce the support obligation, in your view.
No, not at all. I think that the
how can it enforce it given the statute of limitations?
The emphasis has to be on the states. I think as an enforcement mechanism, states are obligated to act promptly in a timely fashion to enforce the rights.
Congress has made a different decision. I mean, maybe Congress never should have passed this law, but when Congress passed the law, it found a federal dimension for people like your client, you know, who go from state to state to state and job to job to job. The states have a very difficult time with that.
Yes, and that's all, as my understanding, that's the whole purpose of the statute is to help the states enforce the child support orders. But there's a flip side, and I think this case presents that flip side, that with that, that federal support, if you will, the states are under some kind of obligation as well to act in a timely fashion to enforce their rights. Look, the Bell's being charged here is fortuitous isn't the right word, but there's something arbitrary about the way he got charged. You have, based on the trial testimony in this case, the caseworker who was assigned to the case, at some point, after 4 or 5 years of this case passing through various hands, just as far as I can tell, washed his hands of it and referred the case for federal prosecution. Mm-hmm. That's how these things, this is how this matter got in federal court.
This court has no authority to tell the prosecutors what to take up.
And I understand. But the court does have the authority to say that if the states and the federal prosecutor acting on behalf of the states do not act in a timely and prompt fashion, that that can violate the statute of limitations. Keep in mind what the goals of the statute are. I mean, I don't disagree with the government's...
Let's just back up for a second. If this child, and I don't know whatever happened to this child, it's kind of a strange record, but if this child turned 18 and the government didn't get around to doing anything until he was 24 years old, everybody would agree that the statute of limitations has passed, that it's been 4 years since there was any child support obligation, too late, you know, whether the guy paid, didn't pay, paid partially. But that's not the posture of this case. The child wasn't going to turn 18 until actually sometime from now, I think.
Maybe 2012, 2013, something along those lines. I guess here's why I think that this is a case where it would be counterproductive to interpret the statute as creating a continuing offense. I'm not surprised when the government argues that these non-support occurs over a long period of time. I mean, keep in mind, you're talking about people who've been obliged to pay something that maybe we might argue they should be doing voluntarily in any event. Over time, as that debt grows, such individuals are even less likely to pay that kind of a debt. And if the result is an increased incident of child poverty, and I understand that position, then it seems to me that what you want to do is use the one part of the statute that really has some teeth, namely the criminal enforcement piece. But that puts a demand on the state to act promptly so that when the threshold is met, they can reach out to the federal prosecutors for assistance, say, look, this guy's not paying his money. Put the fear of God in him. Now, Edelkin even talks about that. It says the 2-year jail sentence is there as Congress's threat. Nobody wants to lock up these guys for 50 years, but the 2 years there to get these recalcitrant non-paying parents to pony up. That's why I think that this is an unusual case where it is almost counterproductive to create a continuing offense. You let these things go on ad infinitum, to a point where it's very unlikely that that child's ever going to see any money. If that's really the goal of this thing, then on some level, I think it makes sense to put the state's feet to the fire as well as Mr. Bell's, and to insist that they act properly to vindicate the rights of their citizens.
You know, I don't want to tell you how to spend your time here, but I think you got a tough road to hoe here on the continuing offense position that you're taking, but I thought you had a reasonable argument on the double counting, so you might want to.
Yeah, I was concerned about that.
A few minutes about that.
Well, the double, I'll be happy to discuss that issue. The double counting issue that we have raised has to do with the fact that the 228 violation is. Falls under a guideline which creates a base offense level of 6. However, in this case, Mr. Bell was tagged with a base offense level of 8 because of the violation of the court order, which we think is an element of which obviously is an element. The support obligation is obviously an element of the offense in this case. Now, I acknowledged in our brief that the only two decisions I could find seem to have justified those kinds of enhancements, but and I see my.
I'll give you an extra minute.
Well, the rationale I gather is the so-called separate harms theory,
right?
Which is incorporated in this Second Circuit case that's cited here.
Well,
I thought that was not followed by this circuit, so
Mr. Bell certainly hopes you'll agree with that, Judge. Mr. Bell certainly hoping you'll agree with that. I guess the bottom line is that we think that the guideline range wasn't properly calculated, so that he should have the matter remanded to Judge Kennelly for a second look at the sentencing. If there are no further questions, I appreciate your time today.
Okay, I'll give you a little bit more for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Ms. Gillers. Gillers.
May it please the Court, Shauna Gillers for the United States. First, briefly, with respect to the continuing offense issue. The plain language of the statute clearly indicates that a willful failure to pay child support is a continuing offense, and therefore the indictment did not violate the statute of limitations. If the Court has no further questions on that issue, I'll move to the sentencing issue.
The sentencing issue is a tough one for you.
And the application of 2B1.1 here, that's what sort of a complicated way that we get there, but it's 2J1.1 is the contempt guideline, and then the sentencing guidelines refer willful violations of willful failure to pay child support obligation to 2B1.1. And 2B1.1 is the general larceny, theft, embezzlement guideline. And inherent in that guideline, there is no element in that guideline or no necessity that a violation of a judicial order be part of that. In fact, that guideline applies to a whole host.
You can't violate the statute without having a judicial order.
I agree entirely with that, Your Honor.
I mean, is that correct? Do I got the facts right?
That is entirely correct. And I think the distinction here is between, or maybe it's a little bit slippery and perhaps on its face confusing, the question of it's not an element of the guideline to violate a judicial order, although it is.
It's not an explicit element.
It's not, Your Honor, an element of the guideline at all, because the guideline 2B1.1, again, applies to general theft, larceny,
mean?
Embezzlement.
You violate the law without having it. I don't see how you can say it's not an element of.
It becomes part of 2B1.1 in those cases where 2J1.1 leads one over to 2B1.1. Otherwise, the Commission either should have buckled down and created its own guideline for these offenses, or it should have done something else. But it has put an offense that already has violation of a court order under 2B1.1.
It does, Your Honor. And I think that the issue with the guidelines is that there are more offenses than there are guidelines.
Yeah, of course.
And I think the
rules of lenity, there are other sorts of things, and we're in an advisory world anyway. It seems to me 2B1.1 has a base level of 6, not 8.
And I think that's right. And then there is an enhancement, a two-level enhancement, to account for the aspect of the offense, which
will cover 100% of the 2J1.1 cases. So it's as though it's going over to a guideline with a base offense level of 8.
I think that's correct, Your Honor, and I think, but again, that's contemplated by the guidelines.
Do you think of any other examples where there's a cross reference that works only if you apply an enhancement?
Your Honor, I didn't cite this case in the brief, but if I may refer to it here, there's a Lalemann decision. I believe it's 94 with I believe the author of the decision was Judge Posner, and in dicta it contemplates precisely 2B1.1 as one of these guidelines which incorporates within it applies to many different types of offenses, and it gives the example of a postal carrier who would always would a post theft by a postal carrier which is referred to 2B1.1, or at least was at the time that decision was written, and the enhancement there would always be an enhancement in those type of cases for a postal worker. I'm not remembering exactly what the enhancement was for. It might have been, I'm not sure what it was. But in that instance, the court did contemplate, yes, in every instance you're going to have that two-level enhancement. But that's just because the guidelines apply to a broader range of offenses than, there are more offenses than there are guidelines.
Well, isn't the rationale of this Maloney case, the Second Circuit, I think, that there's a harm, there's two harms involved. There's a harm to the children, and there's the harm of defying the court. But I was under the impression that we haven't adopted that separate harms approach to the guidelines.
I think that's correct, Your Honor, and the government does not argue, does not make that argument.
I don't know why we're doing it here.
I think the way to think about it, I think, is that it's not a question of different harms, but it's a different aspect of the offense. And in terms of the different aspects of the offense, there's the theft from the child of the funds that are rightly owed to the child, and that falls into the base level, which is appropriately applies to theft and embezzlement. That's the base level for 2B1.1. But if you would just apply that, you would just be accounting for the theft aspect of this offense, and you would not be accounting for the other aspect of this offense, which is the contempt part, which involves violating a known judicial order.
Well, I could buy that if you didn't have to have a judicial order to violate the offense, to create the offense in the first place. I mean, that's a little difficult to rationalize, it seems to me.
The other point that I would make is just that the guidelines do contemplate, and this is 1B1.5, the guidelines do contemplate that where there is a cross-reference, they are incorporating all of the enhancements as well. So there is that intent there in terms of the sentencing guidelines that when they are cross-referencing to 2B1.1, they are intending that the enhancements would also apply.
But you can't think of any example where a court has actually applied a cross-reference that is one that requires the application of an enhancement. We all understand they're permitted, but required is what we have here.
Other than the dicta in the Lalleman case that I referred to earlier, Your Honor, I cannot.
This would be the first time anybody had said that.
I'm not sure if that's the case. Could we request the opportunity to further brief that issue?
Did he get his an 8-level enhancement for the amount of the arrearages here?
He did, I believe, yes.
So the sentence, I assume, he was sentenced within the, 24 to 30 month?
I believe that is correct, and there's a two-year cap, so he got the 2 years, a two-year statutory cap.
And if he was in level two levels lower, he could have still received that same sentence. So
I think that's
correct. That's 18 to 24 months. I don't know, still don't understand why the government argues about things like that under an advisory guideline scheme. If you thought the fellow should have got 2 years, he could have got it with the 6 points and the amount of loss added, as he received here with the 2 point, what looks like potentially doubly counting his violation of the court order.
Well, I'll let both parties in maybe 10 days file a brief, it doesn't need to be long, but a brief statement if there are any precedents where this type of cross-referencing has been accepted in other courts.
Thank you, Your Honor. If there are no further questions, then the government would request that the court affirm the sentence and conviction below.
Okay. Anything further, Mr. Rabbits?
No, Judge, if we have something to say, just put it right.
Okay. Thank you very much. And you were appointed.
Yes.
We thank you very much for your assistance to your client and to the court, and thank you as well.